Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to episode 46 of the AI Comic Pod, brought to you as always by the Anfield Index channel. I'm your host for this evening, Stu, and with me tonight is Rory. How's it going, buddy?
I'm all right. I'm getting better, slowly but surely, so it's all good.
As anyone who follows us will know, Rory is basically the podcasting equivalent of Darren Anderton, but with slightly better hair.
I'd say... Yeah, I wouldn't say Darren Anderton. What other footballers miss a lot of football?
Well, I'd say Jamie Redknapp, but you wish you were Jamie Redknapp.
In fact, I'm not Jamie Redknapp. No, there's no chance I can go that league.
Daniel Sturridge.
I'm not as cool as Daniel Sturridge. I'll be honest, it's not. I'm not in that photo. I'll keep Darren Anderton for now, but we'll work on that. We'll put that in beta and work on it for a future.
Yeah, and those other dulcet tones that you've picked up there are our good friend, Mr. Marco Lopez, who's joined us this evening. And how are you, my friend?
Really tired, but okay.
Oh, God, it's right fucking downer, isn't it? Should I just go and drink something? Should I go and get a bottle and perk everything up?
I might start
slurring my words and I might swear more than usual.
That's impossible. I don't think that's possible.
I think it's okay. I'd literally have to swear for you know, 5 minutes non-stop. Just
I do wonder. I do wonder what the record is for this podcast for the amount of swear words. I think we're quite high.
I'm pretty sure if there's a record,
You probably are. Yeah. But listen, the topic's way too good for us to get too downbeat about. So.
Oh, damn right it is.
He's jumping in there. Jesus,
come on. Yeah, little hosty hostessing over there. Pulling out.
He's itching to get involved, eh?
It's those. I might have been a bit itchy.
Yeah.
It's okay. Well, we've mentioned it a few times on Twitter, as we tend to do. The allotted time has passed now, and we think we're allowed to do Spider-Man Homecoming. So we thought we'd sit down and try and do as good a review as we can. As you know, here we are known for our incredibly high standards. So, you know, the bar's been set quite high.
Yes.
It's been out for, what, 5 weeks, is it, maybe?
I would go, five or six.
So it's been out for long enough that everyone who's going to see it probably has seen it, and everyone who's not seen it is a terrible person and we don't like you anymore.
That's essentially it. If you've not seen it, why are you listening to our podcast? As a golden rule, you know, we're obviously big advocates of Tom Holland and Spider-Man, so I'd be surprised if anyone's listening that hasn't watched the film.
Yeah, speaking of Tom Holland, before we get into it, I didn't realise until you said the other week that he was Dominic Holland's son.
No,
that
and people
made my
who
head fall off.
People who aren't from the UK might not know who Dominic Holland is. He's a kind of mid-level stand-up comic who does a lot of daytime TV, things like The Right Stuff on Channel 5 and stuff like that. He's a bit of a kind of he's got a bit of charisma, obviously, because he's had stand-up background. But he's not. They don't look that alike.
Because he's a weird-looking like troll thing, isn't he? And Tom Holland.
He looks a bit like an extra from Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, he does.
He looks a bit like he stumbled out of Sauron's cave, or, you know, out of the fire that they that place.
It's going to be one of the worst Twitter bios I've ever heard. It looks like an extra from the Lord of the Rings.
We've just been honest. He's quite short, and he quite stumpy, and yeah, he doesn't have. They just don't look alike. It was quite a surprise to me. But then the more I thought about it, and we talked about this, me and Stu, quite a lot, it kind of has that big impact on Tom Holland's charisma.
And his delivery.
On his persona, on his confidence and delivery, you know. And it makes a lot of sense.
He's so comfortable with the little quips and the one-liners.
I hope Tom Holland doesn't listen to this, or Dominic, because I just basically said that he was a troll, didn't I? Or an orc.
Look, if Tom Holland listens to this, we won't have to worry about anything ever again, because all of a sudden we'll convert it into being millionaires. It'll be like the underpants gnomes. Step one, podcast. Step two, Tom Holland listens. Step three, ? Step four, millions.
You know, we keep talking about San Diego Comic Con. I recently discovered there's an international podcasting live event in London, and I'm like, why is Gags not signed us up to that as well?
What a bastard.
Do you know what I mean? I know. Empire Films there, load of other big ones there, not us. Imagine the queue for us in London. It'd be massive.
It would be literally several people.
It would be several people deep, seven or eight.
Possibly, not including family members. I was going to say, if we get all of our family involved, we could easily breach double figures. We could easily be talking about 12 people.
Yeah, exactly. Wow. If we brought all your illegitimate children, we could at least breach 18.
Oh, fucking hell, yeah. Let's not go down there. I can't afford to fly them all over.
That's why Avengers Assemble. Right, yeah. Let's...
So anyway...
That's probably the best tangent you guys have ever done.
Everyone turned off. It's just the three of us.
Yeah, wow. It's fine. Marco, we'll fly Marco in. You know, he can be the guest, special guest. We can do our Logan pod reimagined, which I think is our crowning achievement today. I think the queues would be massive.
Yeah.
It's a dream, man. One day. I didn't really even realise podcasts until, this is completely off topic, but I didn't realise podcasts were quite as big as they are, to be honest. I mean, obviously, sporting podcasts are quite big, and Times and The Guardian and all that jazz, but the kind of leisure ones and the stand-up comedy ones and stuff, they're just, it's massive industry. I think we're not marketing well enough.
But we'll have to get masks.
What's that?
The next thing is video channels, but we'll have to get masks.
I don't want to do video. I'm not a fan.
I could do an anonymous video. If you could get like a scrambler and then, you know, put
a face jacket style thing.
Put like an anonymiser over my voice. So it comes out sounded like this.
We could get masks like the bank robbers in Spider-Man Homecoming.
Dibs being thought.
Guys, Chris Hewitt called. He wants his intro back because you've successfully replicated it.
Yeah, I've been listening to the Empire podcast far too often, it would seem, because I'm ripping off Chris Hewitt, I don't know why we've not asked, because he's been on the movie night, but if we got Chris Hewitt on, that'd be quite a big coup, because Stu won't know who he is, but he's a Liverpool fan, and he also hosts the Empire podcast. He's an Empire.
Get him for Infinity
Wars. I would ask him for Infinity Wars, yeah. It's on the agenda, so yeah, he's a good guy. Stu would like him. He loves Marvel, essentially. It's his big thing, which is obviously in our house of things, you know, we all love it too. So, Which is the best thing about this film? Do you not think that it became a Marvel film? I know we're obviously going to go into detail, but it just feels ultimately Marvel. And I know people are a little bit marveled out, but it felt right, man, this film. You know, even from the opening, you know, just having Happy and Tony in there, it just felt perfectly Marvel.
Well, even from the initial announcements, I'm sure a lot of people, had it not been pulled into the Marvel umbrella, I think a lot of people, when they announced another Spider-Man film and another, like, a soft reboot, a lot of people would have had their heads and hands going, really? Three in the space of 17, 16 years, something like that? Do we really need more? And instantly it would have been an uphill battle, but because it was Marvel, you've got to put the other two to one side and say, well, they're their own separate entity. This is, you know, this is Marvel Spider-Man. This is a whole brand new blank canvas to paint on. And what a masterpiece they've painted as well. Everything from from day one has been positive. It's been exciting. We got a great little introduction to Tom Holland's take on Peter and Spider-Man in Civil War. The rest of the casting, the way they refused to do the Uncle Ben thing, you know, they didn't.
Thing about the film.
It is. They didn't do the spider thing. They didn't do the Uncle Ben thing. They just jumped in. What is it? I think it's meant to be 6 to 12 months after he gets his powers. And
yes,
he's more established than, you know, the first Spider-Man film or the first Amazing Spider-Man, but he's still not 100% of the way there. He hasn't developed his spider sense yet. He's still not 100% sure, for example, how he can cling to walls. He just knows that he can. You know, he's worked out the strength and the agility, but he's not 100% there. And that was the best possible start that I think they could have given it, because if it had been another complete origin story, they would have just lost everyone. It's like Batman. You don't need. I think we might have said it on a previous pod. If you were to
Superman
go up to people
too, and
say, how did Spider-Man get his powers? Everyone knows how Spider-Man got them. You know, a lot of people might not know The Flash, or even might not know what happened to Captain America, but everybody knows Batman and Superman and Spider-Man. So it was very wise of them to just sidestep it and go, right, this is what he is. He's, what, 15, 16 years old. And it was a nice change of pace. It's been likened to, who's the director that did all the 80s, like, teen coming-of-age films? His name's completely gone.
You got to give me a clue, man.
Breakfast Club and Ferris Bueller.
It's got that. The thing I liken it to in terms of recent kind of superhero genre films, and it's not that dark, but it's got a bit of a Kick-Ass kind of feel to it. I don't know if you picked that up.
Yeah,
and just in terms of similar age,
bit,
you know,
slapstick as well, because Kick-Ass was quite. I watched it again the other day, actually.
Yeah,
and it's quite.
But he's got a friend in the same kind of, you know, style. Do you know what I mean? And then there's obviously Hit Girl in that, but there's a girl he's interested in.
One of the best roles of any film ever.
Yeah, she's just perfect, and that's a bit further out there. You've got Nicolas Cage's interpretation of Batman, which is just incredible. Do you know there was going to be a Nicolas Cage Batman film that got pulled?
And it was going to be a Nicolas Cage Superman film that got pulled.
Oh, was that what it was? Okay.
Yeah. Oh, we talked about it on a previous. What was it? We talked about it on a previous pod, and I read out a description of the plot, and my God. Whatever they were drinking that day when they wrote it, fucking hell, it must have been like pints and pints of white spirit to come up with the weird. I think Kevin Smith got involved at one point.
Yeah, it was going to be a Kevin Smith.
He didn't do the original, but I think he did the rewrite.
Yeah.
And then people from the studio kept jumping in and going, oh, do this, do this, do this. And it just turned into
There'll come a day we see a Kevin Smith, like, fully directed picture, because he's obviously been quite heavily involved in the Flash, hasn't he? And it's just, his episodes are always incredible.
You'd think it would be DC, because him and Geoff Johns are really good mates. But he's written loads of comic books. I didn't realise how many he's done. I just finished reading a Daredevil book that he did, and it's incredible. Nice. The guy is seriously talented, and he loves comics, so he's always faithful. But anyway, we love Kevin.
Anyway.
Oh, we should do a Kevin Smith thing.
Yeah, we could.
Not really comic, but we should do a crossover with Movie Night.
Yeah, we'll just do it, man. No one cares.
No one cares.
We get licensed anyway.
There's only us listening anyway.
Yeah, if we just mention comics a couple of times, we can get away with it.
Yeah, say the word comic on the, you know, every 10 minutes, that counts. That'll get past the censors.
Exactly.
So let's bring Marco in, because he might have fallen asleep.
He's there. I'm trying to figure out how I'm going
to follow that. You didn't even get question, man. All we did was a monologue about Kevin Smith. But you know,
I'm the points around. So I do like the fact that it was brought into the MCU, and I'm one of these purists who still fundamentally thinks that, you know, I don't care what people say about the Avengers and some of these other characters we've been introduced to. I still think there's a reason that when you walk out your door and you go to a store, Spider-Man is comfortably the most common, the most recognizable and the most prolific character that you could find on a t-shirt to a coloring book to a game rack, right? So I would argue
Batman, but...
But Batman's only Batman's equivalent. They're both on par, is what I'm saying. But I mean, yeah. My point is, compared to the other Marvel properties, it's comfortably Spider-Man's the guy. Now, I mean, for Spider-Man to finally be part of this, and obviously there was a whole big sort of arrangement with Sony. It was fantastic to see. In terms of the movie itself, and I fully agree with what you guys are saying around the origin story. So I haven't read a lot of the Ultimate Comics line that apparently inspired much of this film. And my reading background on Spider-Man's probably the comic that I've read the most in my life, which is saying something. Fundamentally,
that's why we wanted you on, because you know Spider-Man historically a lot better than we do.
So classic Spider-Man. And I'm not trying to sort of outright disagree with what you guys said around, you know, certain elements.
So is it's just too polite.
because you know what the thing is, I think what's important with all these films is, you know, there's things that they take from the comics and there's things that change. Tony Stark was not funny, but now he's funny. Batman vs. Superman was very faithful to Dark Knight Returns, but it was too dark. There's all these different lines and levels in all the different comic book films that you see. Some stuff they keep, some stuff they change. This Spider-Man film is far more cosmopolitan. It's been modernized. It feels like almost a little bit like one of those high school kid movies that we watched when we were growing up, if you can think of that era. But in a good way. I think even though my preference would always be to sort of follow that very classic Spider-Man comic book route of, you know, understanding the gravity of not see Uncle Ben die again and not like go through the whole power responsibility arc again, but to understand the way that affects his motivations, because I think there was room for it in this film. But either way, it doesn't, you know, the fact that it wasn't there, it doesn't necessarily mean I don't think the film worked. It just means that it wasn't there and I noticed and I still think that the film was fantastic regardless. I won't dispute though, the spider sense thing bugs me a little bit because even though it is quite interesting to suddenly see a sequel where Aunt May knows who he is, because if you've read classic Spider-Man, it is ages before someone in his personal circle.
That's one of my favorite Spider-Man books. The two stories where I'm looking at them now on my shelf and I'm trying to find them. But the one where she finds out at the end of one book, doesn't she? And then it goes into the second one, which is called Revelations.
Yeah, and I mean, like,
hang on,
like,
I've got to find out what it's called.
It takes ages home. For that. Yeah, it takes ages for that to happen, is my point. And I think,
oh God, yeah, you know, he's in his early 20s, isn't he, by the time she finds out?
Yeah.
And I think in continuity now, he's about 25, 26.
But I want to stress, guys, it's not that I disagree with the point. I don't.
I just totally disagree with it.
No, I think you guys are right. I think the important thing to say about this is, and I think this is where I've got to commend Marvel and then Disney for the perspective of saying, look, we're going to do a Spider-Man film. We're going to base it on the character. We're going to change a few things. We're going to put a lot of things in here that you don't actually recognize from the universe. But the spirit of the character, the spirit of the story is going to be the same. I do have a gripe, but I'll get to it later. But when you look at the way they MCU'd it, it worked really well. It was very unique. There's no other film in the MCU quite like this one. And I do like the fact, and maybe this is deliberate on their part, I do like the fact that it feels like it's the most accessible film to a younger audience. I'm not saying we didn't enjoy it as adults, but I do feel like this, out of all the MCU films, is the one that you could probably take more of your kids to, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely.
It had to be, really, because Spider-Man is the kind of universal character. And Batman is obviously, as Stu said, extremely well-loved and liked, but I think Spider-Man is the younger...
It's the age, isn't it? It's easy to relate to because I think we might have mentioned
kids want to. We talked about this before. Kids want to be Spider-Man. Yeah, do you know what I mean? My little boy's favourite outfit. So he's got a Captain America outfit. He's got an Iron Man outfit. He's got...
Yeah, but so far...
Yeah, I know. But he's got all sorts of different things.
Oh, I bet you when he wears it, everyone tells him he's cute. No one tells him.
No, I don't know how they
weirdo.
Even fit you, man. Did you get them specially made? Gigantor over
I'm
there.
I'm not answering that. All I would say is just check on eBay.
Okay.
Trade secret.
And his favourite outfit, as you would expect, is Spider-Man. Because kids love to jump around and they love the energy and the kind of wit and all the kind of, I don't know, brightness that comes along with Spider-Man, really. Because obviously comics are quite dark and they've got that edge to them. Whereas Spider-Man is a different perspective. And I mean, even looking at all the posters to this film and the way it's been portrayed, it's so bright and visual and colourful. And then you look at Ragnarok and Guardians and they kind of have that same kind of very visual feel to them. But I think the films that have gone before in DC and maybe the other two Thor films and stuff, and even the Iron Man films and stuff, are a bit grittier in terms of their posters and their, who they're targeting and their audience. Yeah, I took my little boy to see Spider-Man, and he's been to Guardians 2, and he's seen Guardians 1 as well, and a bit of Avengers here and there and stuff. But Spider-Man's the one that was probably the easiest for him to grasp and have some relate to, you know, something to kind of grab onto. There's one scene about the porno, which he just completely lost, which was just hilarious. But I was just trying to explain to him, yeah, we'll talk about that when you're older, you know?
Thank God, Rory. I think you'd have been worried if you understood that.
Well, exactly. He'd been on Stu's PC or something.
Or he's been listening to this podcast.
Well, exactly. But it's one of those films. It's an extremely accessible film. It's extremely likable. Do you know what I mean? I didn't think there was any elements of it that weren't just fun. You know,
it's a feel-good coming-of-age film, isn't it? And they did.
Yeah,
they did
you're
that,
right.
That
it's got like coming-of-age style.
It.
Yeah, a coming-of-age style film with the kind of superhero crossover, and then it's got a couple of. I think it's got a couple of twists in there that made it different again.
Yeah,
and I think there's a lot of people
that
don't.
We will cover that.
No, exactly. But I think a lot of people don't find it revolutionary. They don't find it that different. I find it really fresh, you know, because what we're into now, films, 17 Marvel films or something. I don't know what we're up to these days.
I don't know.
But it's to make something that feels fresh and feels clean and new and different. Whilst keeping some familiarity as well, obviously, it's quite a hard thing to do. And I think Sony, without the guidance of Kevin Feige and Marvel, would have made a dog's dinner of it, because I think you look at what they've done before and you watch this film and you revisit the amazing Spider-Man films. And I think, Stu, I know you got a bit of a soft spot for Garfield, but he's far too old. And that second film is pretty messy, to be honest. The first one's got a few redeeming qualities.
Well,
but second
I love him.
Yeah, I think he's great, and I like him in everything he's in. I think he's a great actor.
I'm very happy with the first two, to be honest. But I'm talking about way back, 2002, 2004.
Oh, no, me too. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
Spider-Man 3 never happened. No one's ever going to talk about that film positively. It's never happened. But the more recent two, they were just a bit misguided and they weren't in line with what we want. You know, we want Spider-Man in the MCU. I think even, you know, crazily enough, probably my favourite part of this whole film is in the first 5 minutes where he's doing the handy cam from when he's on Civil War and he's just talking about all these great things and it's doing all those flashbacks. It's not maybe my favourite, but it's one of my favourite parts of the film. I just thought it was genius. I just thought that introduction or that crossover from This is Civil War into Homecoming without needing to do this whole endless backstory. You know what I mean? I just thought it was genius, man. I like Marvel does that. It doesn't have to tell these stories of narratives like I'm doing this one. It just has to basically give you a kind of snapshot of this is what happened and this is where we're going straight into the film. I just thought that was perfect.
Right, we'll tell you what, before we go even more off track, if we take it back to Tom Holland himself, if we go to Marco, how does he rank for you performance-wise compared to the previous two Spider-Men.
It's difficult to say. I mean, this was probably the best Peter Parker story, ironically, despite the fact that it missed the components that I mentioned. Well, there's one I mentioned, which was Uncle Ben, which is fine. I think it worked within what they were trying to do with this execution. But the one gripe I do have is, and it's only because I was very excited to see her cast as well, I felt like there was very little development sort of placed on you know, the relationship with Aunt May. So I didn't get a good sense of Peter and May in that relationship, if that makes sense. Nonetheless, Tom did Peter Parker really well. You know, this kid anxious for approval, struggling to balance all the balls in the air, constantly disappointing people, presumptuous in his superhero activities. I love the whole, you know, this dynamic of him being almost clumsy in the movie's first act, where he's webbing a guy who's trying to get into his own car. He's scaring kids in the back garden. That's very Peter in the early days. If you contrast it against the others, I mean, it's weird. I loved Andrew Garfield's chemistry with Gwen Stacy, or that character portrayed by Emma Stone, of course. I felt it was believable and meaningful. As Spider-Man, he was far funnier than Maguire, but not necessarily as funny as Holland. So we've got to give Tom props for that. Maguire he was pretty grounded as Peter, and I thought that that whole anxious relationship dynamic that he had with the Osborns made for very good drama. His interplay with Aunt May is probably the best we've had, even if it's a little bit safe. So it's not particularly interesting. And as Spider-Man, I think he's pretty good. He's just not very funny. So Tom has the potential to obviously elevate past this, right? Because he's good as Spider-Man. But I'm hoping – the only thing is I'd want to see that juvenile phase ending pretty soon. Because, again, I can't sort of speak for the modern take on Spidey in the recent comics, but classic Spider-Man in the comics doesn't stay at Midtown High too long. The Spider-Man reflected and living during university and working class Spider-Man, arguably my favorite version of him, because then the juvenile stuff stops and then the full force of his powers and significance starts to take effect. I didn't get the sense of Tom being an action hero. I really wanted to see more of the science whiz stuff, because I think that's something we didn't see enough of this film, this ingenuity that Peter actually has, because of the, you know, it was pretty much left to him and Ned having this great way that they effectively managed to jailbreak the suit, which is cool, but Spider-Man in the comics often, you know, figures a lot of this stuff out, and he's often confronted with enemies that he actually can't physically beat. He has to be smarter than them, which he is. But what did come through, which I think is fantastic, is Peter's determination, courage, and resilience, and I think that's really important around, you know, how that portrayal comes along. So if he's not the best Spider-Man stroke Peter Parker for most people, he will be probably in a couple of movies' time, I reckon.
Okay, what about you, Rory? Where does he rank for you?
I'm a little bit kinder. I think it's the best all round that we've had. So I can see some merit. I mean, Tobey Maguire, you hate him, Stu, but I think that's harsh. I think he was interesting enough in the role, and I think he brought some good characteristics to it, but he's just not believable enough for me at times. Spider-Man 2 is a really great film.
But is Spider-Man 2 a great film because of him or because of the villain?
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously a mixture of both, but I think the villain.
It's Dr. Octopus.
I mean, he's a great villain. No doubt about that. He's an incredible villain. And I hope they reboot that into some future film, because he's just amazing. But Garfield just didn't sit right. I think the whole... He's too old, man. I mean, he's just too old. And he's almost... That sounds a bit... He's probably too good-looking as well. And I know it sounds...
Peter Parker is—he's always been typically drawn as being a handsome guy, and he's never been short of female attention.
I just think he may be a bit too clean cut, you know. I think Tom Holland is really young in his approach to it, but obviously he's playing a 15, 16-year-old, and I think Marco's right. I think you want to see him get past that, see a little bit more what he can do. But I thought it was quite clever how they played with the concept of, you know, growing into becoming Spider-Man, you know, and the combinations. How many combinations are there? That would have been a quiz question.
500 and something different combinations. Yeah,
that kind of thing. And
I was too busy recognizing Jennifer Connelly's sweet voice.
Yeah, exactly.
Which, little side note for everyone, Jennifer Connelly is married to
Paul Bettany.
And Paul Bettany plays
Jarvis. Vision,
a.k.a. Jarvis. So the original voice of Tony's suit is married to the voice of Spider-Man's suit.
And that can't not be on purpose. That's too
totally deliberate. Just Marvel love in-your-face Easter eggs, don't they?
Yeah, they love the a things bit of that. That when so I thought that was genius.
Go, oh, God, I can't believe I didn't pick up on that.
Well, I think we all did for once, which is, you know, but it's pretty straightly obvious. But I just think his charisma, his charm, his wit is just ace. His comic timing, he's got so much energy. I love the fact that he put all the effort into becoming, you know, a gymnast.
He trained in gymnastics from a very, very young age. And there's a brilliant
story. But he pushed himself harder, man.
Yeah. When he went for the audition, he was asking them, well, do you want me to do a flip? You know, do you want me? I think at one point they wanted him to read a line. And he was like, well, what about if I was to flip in or something to make it a bit more believable? And they were like, okay. And we've praised him on many, many different pods. It makes him more believable because they're less reliant on stunt people and less reliant on CGI because he's able to do so much of it himself. Obviously, within reason, he's not allowed to do the really heavy-duty, super hardcore stuff where he could potentially really hurt himself.
Yeah.
But previously going into this, if I was being objective and if I take off my I hate Tobey Maguire glasses, Tobey Maguire was probably the better Spider-Man because I think the CG was a little bit smoother and a little bit less bendy, if you see what I mean. The Amazing Spider-Man, sometimes he just moved like he was a piece of latex rather than an actual human with a, you know, skeletal system. But Andrew Garfield was by far the better Peter Parker, but Tom Holland for me has eclipsed them both. I think he's finally got the balance right. The only thing I would say is he's probably not as believable in terms of the fighting, but I think that makes sense when you think he's only 15, 16 years old. You know, he's
and his powers make up for that. Do you know what I mean? It's one of those where his use and exuberance kind of get him by, basically. Do you know what I mean? Because he's not fighting well in this film, is he? Let's be honest.
He's not, but that makes it more believable because if all of a sudden he was pulling off all these incredible moves and bench pressing people, even though he physically can, he doesn't know how to. You know, he doesn't know the logistics.
He's making it happen. In his own way, like the scene when he's chasing down the van, you know, and going through all the gardens and all that kind of slapstick humour. But that works, man. You know, it does work. Something you might not have heard. So him and John Bernthal were on set of a film in Ireland that I've not seen. When you already know this.
I do.
You know everything about this shit.
I'm online all the time. I'm never offline.
There'll come a day where I will say something. You'll be like, no, I did not know that. That's
only if I've been asleep or in a coma.
Well, but you're going to refer to the fact that they helped each other, right?
Yeah, man. Yeah, so they were doing their, which I didn't know actors did so much actually anymore, to be honest. Where they do their like videos for screen test videos, isn't it? Basically,
yeah.
And John Bernthal was helping Holland with his lines and stuff, which I thought was really cool. And I think he did the same for him with Punisher.
Yeah.
Which is really cool because they're two of our favourite characters, you know. And I kind of like, I don't know, it certainly made me like John Bernthal even more because he looks like a guy that wouldn't be approached and he's obviously clearly not that in the slightest, you know what I mean? Which is kind of likeable because, he's an extremely tough coming across dude. So, yeah, I thought that was really cool. I like the way that things kind of aren't ground in the superhero context, you know. As soon as you, there's always a kind of wheel of involvement, a little bit like the Jennifer Connelly thing. I like all that kind of stuff. I think it plays really well. I think this film kind of ties in a lot of things.
Remind me to speak to you about the license plates when you talk about Easter eggs later.
Oh man, you know your stuff.
I think I know what you're going to say about them, but yeah.
Okay. Do you want me to tell you now?
No, not just yet. We'll do that in a bit. So, one thing for you, Marco, was a long time Spider-Man reader. You, I assume you were quite pleased when they announced that they were doing the Vulture as a villain. Because if I remember rightly, the Vulture was, he was either Spider-Man's first villain or he was his first proper villain.
Yeah, probably his first proper villain. Him and the Tinkerer make their appearances way back in the very second issue of Amazing Spider-Man.
So you're talking, what, fact, is that late 30s?
No, 63. So here's the first Easter egg. When you see their vehicle drive off in the car, the license plate is SM20563, which people are referencing as Spider-Man issue number 2 in May 1963, which is the date of that exact issue. I was delighted. First of all, because, you know, the Vulture is one of those characters who I think you can, because the Spider-Man Rogues Gallery is so cool, you can probably look at some classification. There's medium villains, let's call them. I'd put Shocker in that category. Major villains would be people like the Goblin, the Vulture, Doc Ock, Venom, etc. And I thought it was fantastic to not only go with someone like the Vulture, who we haven't seen before as well. It's important that it's someone new. But just the way I thought the whole interplay with the way that it brought it into what was fundamentally a very grounded story was brilliant. I really, really liked that. I didn't expect that at all from the film to start that way. You've got the damage control guys coming in, trying effectively taking business away from these working class types. And it fits in very nicely with something that often happens with Spider-Man villains where it's very odd. Every now and then you find yourself relating a lot to a Spider-Man villain, even though they're a bad guy. So you've always got these dichotomies. One of the reasons Dr. Octopus works so well in Spider-Man 2 is for that reason. And I think the Vulture was so interestingly portrayed in this film. And sorry, I just want to quickly say it. Michael Keaton is brilliant in this movie.
He really is.
He steals every scene. My favorite scene in the film is in the car, which is so funny because, like, you know, it's a Spider-Man film. You'd expect it to be some fight or something. It's just the Vulture really, really, really does well to, put across this highly clever and there's this element of sympathy that you start with. He's just absolutely brilliant in the way that he sort of portrays his plan. He's trying to keep under the radar of the Avengers, which also then works for the very grounded nature of the film. So it's just, I really, really was delighted with the casting of Keaton and them specifically going for the Vulture. It's also ironic considering his role in Birdman as well.
So. Yeah, it was interesting because the logical thing for them to do would have been Dr. Octopus or the Green Goblin, you know, somebody that we've seen on screen before and somebody that people would have been a little bit more familiar with, because outside of the animated series, a lot of people probably aren't that familiar with the Vulture, and the version they did on the animated series was slightly, they tweaked it a bit, didn't they, where he's got those gauntlets and he drains life force out of people to use himself.
Trying to get younger. So, the whole thing is trying to get younger.
So it would have been a little bit strange for them to have gone down that route, because that would have been a really weird thing to throw in. But like you say, they did a brilliant job of humanizing him, and you can understand how a normal everyday guy has gone from a blue collar job or white collar job, whatever color it is, to super villainy. But he's doing it to stay below the radar, and it fits in with the image of the humble friendly neighborhood Spider-Man, doesn't it? You know, the friendly neighborhood Spider-Man is looking after the low-level neighborhood villains, and he leaves the big guys to the Avengers. So, and there's great stories about Michael Keaton. He was constantly walking around saying Batman lines in a Batman voice to crack everyone up. He was always doing it to try and make Tom Holland laugh. And, you know, what was that film? Was it 89 that came out? And you can still in your head see the first time when he's holding that guy, and the first time he pulls him right to his face and goes, "I'm Batman." And you can imagine him doing that when they're trying to film this scene, you know, nearly all this time later. It's just, and Michael Keaton's brilliant. We love Michael Keaton. He was a great piece of casting. And he's obviously the biggest name in there. Of the main cast, you know, if you take Robert Downey Jr. out of there, because he's not really a main, he's a supporting character, isn't he? And you think that the rest of the cast is made up of relatively unknown people. So, yeah. Rory, have you had any exposure to the Vulture, and how did you find him as a choice for a villain?
Yeah, I didn't expect the Vulture either, to be honest. I thought it was quite an interesting, very modern take on the Vulture, because, you know, he's not the coolest looking villain normally. Do you know what I mean? Bald, suits a bit awkward, and whereas this is obviously ultra tech, ultra modern. I don't know, from the things that I've read and stories that I've seen in Spider-Man, it's a completely different retelling. I thought it was cool, to be honest. I thought Keaton was just perfect casting. I think his gravitas just really brought another level to the film, and that particular scene in the car, kind of on the reveal, was pretty...
It was very sinister, wasn't it? I just saved your life,
sinister,
what
man,
you say?
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, yeah. Thank you. And he's really scared the shit out of him.
Well, exactly. And he's got that presence and that menace that you believe, you know. And it needed someone of that caliber because, like you said, you know, Tony's in it. Robert Downey Jr. is in it for a period. And obviously Happy, Jon Favreau's in it. And it's great to have Happy back. I think that was great touch. And I thought he was really interesting as the kind of, I don't know, the contact, isn't he? He's the kind of contact, but he's a little bit, He's happy. He's clumsy. He's not particularly organised. He's tasked with doing something, and eventually, you know, Peter's the one that bails him out, really. And yeah, I thought the whole cast, experience-wise, brought by those kind of three, was really good. And I think the younger ones held up really well. I mean, the kid that's his best friend—that's his first film. I thought he
really?
Was really good. Yeah, it's his first film.
There you go. You did it.
Yeah, I did it. Yeah, it's not major, but I did it. Yeah, so his first appearance in film, full stop, which I thought is great because he came across pretty experienced, actually, and actually worked really well in the role. A bit of kind of light relief, do you know what I mean, which you needed. And then everyone was a bit dubious about people like Zendaya because of her background, but I thought she was great. I thought she was really kind of mysterious. She was the more interesting of the two kind of female leads. Well, it's, you know, the female parts in it anyway. I think the only one for me, I'm just not sure about Marissa Tomei as May Parker, to be honest. Aunt May, I just don't see it.
Completely. It wasn't service.
I just didn't get it. It was fun in Civil War and it was funny, but it was just awkward in this. And I don't know if that was just me.
I agree with that. I felt it was something that maybe needed a bit more contextual writing, because it almost felt there was a point in the film where I thought that Peter's relationship to Tony felt far more important than Peter's relationship to May. I'm not necessarily saying that wasn't his, you know, Peter's intense emotion, but I just, which is fine because he was trying really hard to impress Tony after all and live up to whatever Tony was trying to impart on him. But I didn't always get a sense that he was as anxious about Aunt May. And again, I think, you know, I'm trying very hard not to make that comment with the classic comic arc in mind, because, you know, the whole intent of this film wasn't to try and put across this angstful Spider-Man. An anxious one, yes, but not an angstful one, because there is an important difference. But I think in that respect, you know, Marissa Tomei then remains a weird, but maybe then that's probably why they decided to do this whole thing where she suddenly finds out, because that might actually create a very interesting dynamic between the two of them, which you can explore in subsequent films.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Stu, your take on her?
I liked her. I think her being a bit younger, I think they've been able to add a different dynamic in, because previously she's always been doddering around the house and,
yeah, you know, she's a bit of a lurker, I would say.
Yeah,
thought,
she's always just there in the background, but the youth and her, I mean, they've taken a good bloody 20 odd years off her. You know, she's been more like his grandma than his aunt, the way they've depicted her. And I would say this is probably more of a fair reflection on the sort of age gap.
It is, yeah. But just the way she, I don't know, the way it was pitched, it didn't quite fit with me.
I liked it. I thought it worked pretty well, but I think that there's definitely a lot more potential for her character now she knows what's going on, because now she's got to be more involved in his life, and now you can imagine in future films there's going to be a lot more room for her to be having little one-liners and maybe even helping him out, you know, if he had, you know, sending him off somewhere to do something and what have you. I don't know. And
I think the one thing she didn't get is to interact with anyone else, because in Civil War, she's playing off Tony, and that works extremely well because obviously it's Robert Downey Jr. and yeah, full stop really. But that worked quite cleverly. I think they've worked together before as well in the past, and it just seemed to work. I think in this, that relationship didn't quite. Yeah, that's the one that was a little bit out of tune. But, you know, there's still some other good stuff. And that, like I said, I think his relationships in general were interesting. You know, I think he had enough turmoil and enough issues, but there's going to be some more development to go there. And obviously it's the first of what will be a trilogy and then some probably. So the scope for the character to develop, there's obviously a lot of room. I think this is one of the best. If you're looking at an origin story and a kind of new take on things, it's probably one of the best origin stories we've had, you know, because
yeah.
I think it's better than Thor. I'm a really soft spot for the Captain America film. Crossing over, I think Wonder Woman was fantastic for an origin story, in fairness, but you know, I think Spider-Man's certainly up there. I mean, it's Iron Man's pretty damn good as well. So they generally get it right, but I thought this was quite unique. It was a little bit different.
Yeah. I thought the way that all the characters interacted, that's one of the things, again, not necessarily that they're going for it, but it did mirror a lot of the cool things around the classic period of the comics, because you get the sense at high school, and this is the weird thing, that even though Flash is depicted in the comics as this big, typical, you know, American style quarterback. He's a total jock, and I mean the take on Flash here in this film is actually quite funny as well, because he is kind of a jock as well, but just far more modernized. So he's not necessarily all like brutish and huge muscles and stuff, but he's just, you know, I guess cooler.
He's a bit of a big rich kid, isn't he?
Yeah, exactly. But this is one of the best parts about this film. I mean, my wife and I watched it, and we couldn't stop waxing lyrically about the way that they mixed it up. It felt like a typical American high school, or at least what I think one is. It felt very cosmopolitan. I loved how everyone was from, you know, mixed backgrounds and racial backgrounds and what have you. Ned's performance was that good that I think you've got to put him on the same level as Luis and Ant-Man or Wong and Doctor Strange.
Whoa.
No one's on Luis's level.
But I think he's close to it, man, because he was so funny.
I love it when he puts on the mask.
He landed a lot of the lines. He was also part of the only moment of heartbreak in the film when he dropped the freaking Death Star. You can't do
Lego Death Star, man. Literally, that gave me palpitations. Like, Jake destroys his Lego and it literally kills my OCD, man.
I can relate. But I mean, like that whole the whole group. Liz Allen, well cast, well portrayed.
Yeah, she was good.
She was cool. Flash was cool. I thought Michelle was interesting. A relevant piece, sort of placed in this universe. Very calculated, very thoughtful, intelligent. I think far more accessible to most girls of the current era, I would think. I
like, there's one observation just quickly, you know, that they won the competition without Peter.
I love that.
I love that as well. And that's obviously quite a little thing for a lot of people. But for me, it's good because it gave them a little bit of empowerment in the fact that it's not just Peter that wins everything. It's not that him is what they're totally relying on. Do you know what I mean? I just thought that was quite clever. Because I think in old Spider-Man films gone by, they wouldn't have won. It's the typical failure because you've not got Peter there, you know? And yeah, I think that was interesting. Anyway, I saw that was a little touch that was good.
I agree. I just think the whole group was just really well assembled and it worked really nicely. And again, like I said, it just reminded me a lot in the comics. Comic books often put a lot of emphasis on the interplay between Peter, Flash, Harry, MJ when she shows up, Gwen, Liz Allen early on. You know, there's just a lot of good stuff, and they really captured that really, really well, I felt.
Yeah, they did. Sticking with one of those people mentioned, you've got Liz Allen. She's a long-term love interest from the comics, isn't she? But she's not depicted that often. It tends to be Mary Jane is the go-to love interest for Spider-Man. And occasionally you get Gwen Stacy. But sticking with Liz, did either of you see the plot twist coming?
Not a chance.
No.
I don't know why I didn't even clock to it, because it was alluding... it's Keaton. It's too damn good. It was alluding to something, you know, it was. You probably, you know, hindsight's always a wonderful thing, isn't it? But I just didn't get it at all. And it really shocked me, actually, because I was like, shit, that's a really clever plot twist. I thought, and then that... You know, when he's driving him to the prom, it's just genius, man. It's just genius.
The sinister looks on his face every time she says something, like she's like, "Oh, but you know, Peter wasn't actually with us," and "Oh, but
you can't keep a poker face." Let's put it that way, Peter Parker, Tom Holland in that regard cannot keep.
Oh, what
a poker
you stopped working with Tony Stark? Oh, right, okay. And every time he says something, you can see the cogs going round in her dad's head, and he's going, Okay, maybe that's a coincidence, and then there's three or four, and he's like, this is
not Spider-Man.
But that's the thing. That's the thing that I love as well about it, is because you often have these situations, and I mean, the biggest culprit, infamously, I suppose, is Superman, where, you know, bad guys or people around them can't figure it out. They can't figure out the link, save for a pair of glasses and one hair curl.
You do know what the full comic explanation for that is?
No.
Right. I don't know how canon this is now, but there was years and years and years ago an explanation given as to why people can't tell the difference. And it's kind of like a localized mind control, that when he puts it, it's not putting on the glasses. There's something that his Kryptonian brain does that changes people's perception of how he looks.
Okay, so in the absence of stuff that otherwise you'd know, but that's interesting, Stu. I just love the fact that, you know, Keaton figures something out that everyone just basically would otherwise figure out logically. Because one of the things that's always intrigued me about, so for example, in the comic arcs that I've read, Peter gets very anxious that Captain Stacy deduces his identity. He doesn't, unlike we saw in the Amazing Spider-Man films with Andrew Garfield, we don't ever see that, you know, explicit reveal. I like the fact that Michael Keaton's Vulture figured this out. I like the fact that he then used it, fun enough, not to suddenly do this whole big revenge plot against Peter, but almost to say, listen, right now, I'm going to play the card of being aware that I'm a father and a villain, and I'm just going to give you a very friendly warning that if you take this next step, you're going to lose out, not me. And it's just interesting to then see, obviously, what happens after that. But I love the fact that he figured it out. I think it brings it far more into a real space. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, it also goes a long way to showing his intellect, doesn't it? They've built him up. He's clearly a very, very, very clever guy, and this just reinforces that. Why, you know, a lot of people tend to not have their secret identities exploited like this. So the fact that one person's been able to me anyway, it really puts him on a pedestal of, well, this is how clever he is. A lot of people would have seen these things and just written them off and gone, he couldn't be. This little kid here, he couldn't be Spider-Man. But he's the only one that, you know, puts them together and comes out with it. But
At that point as well, Spider-Man's not particularly established, because he's not, you know, there's a bit of YouTube revelation, you know, but he's not that well known in New York terms, you know? It was very much an origin neighborhood story. It was very local rooted. He only gets to know him because of the disruptions he does to his plans, you know? And I thought that kind of scene around the bank, when you got those kind of alien weapons, which they've taken from the first Avengers film, I thought that was pretty cool. I think the timelines are a bit confusing. Is that fair to say? Because of Avengers, and they said how many years on, and it doesn't feel that many years on.
Yeah, if you listen to a couple of the Empire podcasts, the guys are convinced that Disney have messed up. They're missing a year somewhere, but it's fine. I think we can forgive them this because
we can. Yeah. I think we're at this stage now where we just don't know what the hell's going on in terms of timelines, because there was that same thing in Doctor Strange, wasn't there, where we couldn't figure out who the paraplegic person was, you know, whether we thought it was Rhodey or whether we thought it was someone else. I think we're a little bit who knows what, but we've got Infinity Wars to come, so we have no idea what the hell's going to happen. And we've got a 90s set Captain Marvel film, so that's not going to confuse anything. I genuinely thought this film was a massive success. I think the box office numbers show that. I think people maybe expected a little bit more from it. I think those people are pretty harsh, personally.
Yeah, there's.
It's a bit lacking in action, would you think, for a Spider-Man film?
I think the action works.
I think it makes complete sense.
It depends what you compare it to, because I think if you look at the kind of Spider-Man that people would have wanted to put on film in 2002. This kind of film wouldn't have necessarily worked. But if you look at the kind of Spider-Man, and again, this is what I was trying to say. This is based in the comics, and it's even based in a certain particular component and theme of it within the MCU as well. So it needs to be able to access Tony Stark and weave in some of the broader things, even right back to the first Avengers film. So it is light on action, and I think, you know, it's always fun to see a big spectacular punch-up, but I'd almost argue that they kind of already gave us that in Civil War, because that's still just such an amazing fight anyway. I think it comes across as this, I don't know, it's like the MCU version of Ferris Bueller's Day Off, and it was just a lot funnier and a lot better, and it worked for me. I mean, yeah, there's not a lot of fighting, but
as I said, it works completely for me. I'm just putting out the feelers from some of the feedback from some people, because that's one of the criticisms I've read among various other bits and pieces. But I think overall people came out smiling, and I think sometimes you need that. I think one thing we've not mentioned, and Stu might have done, is the Captain America stuff. I saw the coach. The dejected-looking coach was incredible. I thought he was perfect. I thought his line about whether we're allowed to use these Captain America things, because he's now a fugitive. Yeah, I thought was just genius. It actually made me laugh out loud in the cinema, which is quite rare. And I thought all those Captain America things were just brilliant. I thought it was
best
just
post-credits scene ever.
Stu?
Worst post-credit scene ever, because it made me really fucking angry.
Yeah, I was expecting
really
more.
Angry. There was a couple of good little nods just before we do start to think about wrapping up, which takes about 15 minutes. There was a couple of little nods in there to other characters that are worth mentioning. We've obviously got the Scorpion is in there, Matt Gargan, and that one, they mentioned that a couple of times, because it was when he was talking to the Tinkerer, and I forget the exact line, but he says something like, we've got that Gargan piece or that Gargan job. And as soon as he said that, me and Tom, my mate that I went to see it with, we both looked at each other and went, "Man, Gargan," because the Scorpion is a classic Spider-Man villain as well, a long time member of the Sinister Six. So they've given that payoff a little bit. Then you see him on the ferry, and he's even got a Scorpion tattoo on his neck. And then he's in the mid-credit scene. For anyone that didn't know, that's the guy that asks Toomes in the prison. You know, there's word going around that you know who Spider-Man really is. And he's like, well, no, because if I knew who he was, I would have killed him by now, wouldn't he? So at some point you'd think in the second or the third Spider-Man film, that's got to come off, and Scorpion has got to fully come out with the suit and with the mechanical tail that shoots acid. We've not had
Scorpion depicted, have we?
Not in film, but he was a long-term part.
We've had a lot, right?
Series.
So we've had like Sandman, Venom, Doc Ock, Green Goblin,
Electro.
Who was the? Is it? Oh, it's the Croc, isn't it? It's the
lizard
thing in the do.
So there's been a lot of his big.
But there's so many more, man. That's the thing with Spider-Man. The villain list is just
there
mental.
Is. He's got. I think we did an official pod, and you lovely listeners and followers ranked Spider-Man as having the second best rogues gallery after Batman. Which is
That's completely fair.
That's just totally fair.
Yeah.
Donald Glover, that was very briefly in there. He was the character that he's playing.
I've seen him listed, but I didn't know what he played. I can't remember him in the film actually.
Well, he's the guy that's trying to buy weapons underneath that bridge, and Spider-Man interrupts it.
Spider-Man
does that horrible interrogation, which is really funny as well.
Donald Glover is just give me more of Donald Glover. He's just an absolute legend.
He's really good. Because the character that he's playing is in the comics. He's a bit of a vigilante as well, isn't he? And he's called the Prowler. And he mentions that he's got a nephew who lives in the area. And that is Miles Morales. So for anyone who doesn't know, Miles Morales is a current incarnation of Spider-Man from a parallel universe. Young African-American teenager. So we won't pour into them too much. It's just, again, they're little Easter eggs that have been put out there quite prominently.
Just to add to that Easter egg, if you look at the license plate on the car during that interrogation, USC-M01... or in English, Ultimate Comics Spider-Man number 1, which is the first appearance of Miles Morales and the Prowler.
Because that's his title, isn't he?
See, that to me wouldn't happen if it wasn't under the Marvel guidance.
No.
Do you know what I mean? No. There's no way. There's just no way. And I just thought, that's the thing about this film. It did, and we've alluded to it, we talked about it a lot, but you know, Jon Favreau was so important to this film. Do you think, after not seeing him for what? Well, was he in Iron Man 3? I know he's certainly in the first two.
The extremist virus nearly kills him, or there's that attack that he experiences.
Oh, yeah. But we've not had any involvement from him. I was a bit surprised to see him back, to be honest. I mean, it was probably known quite early on.
Oh, it was. They announced it very, very early on that he was going to be involved and that he was going to be coming back.
Is there scope that he's going to direct a Spider-Man film, do we think?
No, there's been suggestions. When Spider-Man started filming and they were all together, there was photos that came out of Tom Holland, Jon Favreau, Robert Downey Jr. and Kevin Feige. And there were suggestions that at the moment, Marvel aren't making any plans to make another Iron Man film. But if they do make another Iron Man film, they want Jon Favreau to direct it and he's happy to do so.
Oh my God.
But that's all going to depend on what happens. You know, does Iron Man die in Infinity War, or does he get injured so he retires or whatever? But
I think it's fair to say he's probably getting too old.
He's getting too old, so he's going out of it in one way or another.
I think we're expecting something bold in Infinity Wars for him or Captain America, but that's another discussion. But
speaking of Infinity Wars,
go on.
I don't know how many of you have watched the leak trailer, because by now I thought the Infinity War trailer would have come out fully, but it hadn't.
That's what I disagreed with last was that it wasn't a trailer for me. And you said, yeah, it's a trailer. It's compiled load of clips. It wasn't a fully formed trailer for me. Do you know what I mean?
They'd call it a teaser, wouldn't they?
Yeah, exactly.
It's not generally with a full.
God, I watched it ages ago. How long's Comic-Con gone? It's a month.
No, it's about 4-6 weeks ago.
Yeah. I can't believe nothing's come out since. Yeah.
We did the review on it.
Do we reckon pre-Ragnarok?
I think it'll be released online, you know, by like Marvel Studios in the weeks leading up to Ragnarok, but with the full release being in the cinema. But in that, you get to see Peter wearing the new suit. For anyone who knows,
you've just ruined Marco. He's not seen it, man.
No, but I knew about that. That didn't spoil.
Yeah, okay. That doesn't matter.
And in any case, I figured, like, they're not going to tease the suit Spider-Man Homecoming and then... Yeah,
it's the Iron Spider suit. It's the Iron Spider suit. It's not the traditional Iron Spider suit.
They're calling it, but my first thought when I saw it, I actually think it looks more like Ben Reilly's Spider-Man suit from the mid-90s, I think it was. 94, 95.
You're talking about the Scarlet Spider outfit?
No, when Ben Reilly becomes Spider-Man.
Oh, right.
Because that's the one where he had the giant spider on the chest where the arms and legs go over the top and around the back. And when I first saw it, that's what I thought of. But it is being depicted as the Iron Spider suit where it's a little more armoured. It's got more gadgets. As far as we can see, it doesn't have the protruding legs that come out the back, which are cool as fuck. And the only the major difference really is that they've stuck with the red and blue theme rather than the Iron Man red and gold theme, which would have been a dead giveaway. But still, that's a big point to end the film on, because he's presenting him with pretty much everything that he wants. You know, he's offering him full-time Avengers membership. He wants him to move into the new facility. He'd be living there with all of these guys that he could learn so much from. And
all the exposure as well, man. You know,
and he's offering him this incredible new suit that would have even more toys and gadgets for him to play with. But he has a rare moment of humility, and he accepts that what he said to him at the beginning of the film about, you know, you stay below the radar, you operate in that little grey area, you know, you're too big for the police, but you're too small for the Avengers. That your sweet spot is right there in the middle, and he accepts, who's going to look after the little guy? And I thought that was a really good payoff, because that's what Spider-Man, the saying has always been, just your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. And that's what he's doing. He's there looking after, catching the bank robbers and the criminals that are trying to abduct people down alleyways and stuff like that.
It was a moral lesson, wasn't it? Do you know what I mean?
It was
the moral lesson, and it went full circle. And I think actually that was probably the best way they could have ended it, because he could have easily, in another, ending, could have just walked out into the room and it cut. Do you know what I mean? He could have walked through those doors. And I thought it was really clever, because he obviously is going to be involved in Avengers. That's very clear. But it's going to come together in a different way, and he's going to come in to consideration for his own merit, kind of thing. And I think that's what all the film was, him fighting against Tony's overcomplications. Do you know what I mean? Because Tony's trying to put all the tech in the suit, and Spider-Man wants to do it his own way. Do you know what I mean? He wants basic spider settings. He doesn't want all this other
advanced interrogation mode and instant kill.
Instant kill was hilarious. But he didn't want that, because he wanted to be himself. Do you know what I mean? And I think the suit took away from a little bit of that, and I thought that was really cleverly done, actually. I think that ending really helped the film. I think without that ending, it wouldn't have come together quite the way it did, personally.
I was a little bit disappointed. I wanted him to accept the membership.
He's got his time on his side, man. It's going to happen.
But I think the way it develops in the future will sort of, take the right trajectory. Because, I mean...
on his terms, maybe.
Yeah, he needs his own moment to grow and develop it. Also, like, let's be honest, a few Avengers just need to be killed off. Spider-Man needs to become a force in his own, and rather than what we're looking at, sort of this kid lacking or needing way too much supervision, I think he's going to need the suit, because the stuff that I've read on Thanos is not pretty. It's really not pretty. But it's just important. What I like is the fact that here we are, we've had nearly a decade of this MCU going, all these characters have been well developed and richly sort of portrayed, and the youngest one in the lineup is Spider-Man, and I think that's awesome, because if somehow something good happens between Sony and Disney, I'm hopeful that that means the best character then gets more mileage. But maybe that's a bit of wishful thinking on my part.
Well, that could be
Maybe Groot is technically younger.
That could be his way in. You know, if some of the older ones, or if some of the older ones walk away, or some of the weaker ones get killed off, cough Hawkeye, then you know there could be an opening, and they could sort of come to him and say, "Look, you know, we're a little bit thin on the ground. We really need you to step up. We need you to come and become an Avenger. We think you're ready."
The only thing
is
lacking, Marvel, for me, is that kind of heavy emotional hit. And I think because it's played safe a little bit, because it wants to grow everyone's favourite characters and peek into this kind of film, I think it started to lean that way with Civil War. Do you know what I mean? And then we've obviously, from a different perspective, had, you know, Logan, which was extremely bold. And I just hope we get a bit more of that. So obviously, getting the audience right, this is a little bit more family orientated, do you know what I mean, than a very heavy, dark Logan film. But I think we need to see characters changing. I think it's about time, to be honest. And it will freshen it up, because I think we're at the pinnacle and the peak of what they've looked to achieve. And then they're going to go again, aren't they? Let's be honest. It's not going to stop.
Just quickly to add to that, like, the only reason Logan has that big emotional payoff, well, not the only reason, but one of the reasons, is because you've been with the character for a while.
Exactly. So,
and I think the MCU's done that job well, so...
Yeah, I think Civil War hit as emotionally as most films do. Not Logan, but not far off, because, you know, you had that relationship between Iron Man and Cap, and it was something else, really. I thought it really delivered, and I think we just need to... I think we'll see more of that. Well, I think we'll see a lot more of that in the next two big films, to be honest. I think they're going to be monumental.
The only thing I'd be curious to see, and it's weird, because I don't know where practically where the future does go, because, like, for example, let's say Disney does in fact get more rights to use him. Does that mean that they bring him more into the... Does he cross over into Daredevil's universe, for example? Because Kingpin is actually a pretty frequent enemy of Spider-Man. But I don't know...
I don't think the TV will cross over. I don't think Netflix will have a crossover.
They've been pretty categorical in saying that they haven't got any plans, short or long term, for Netflix and the MCU to even remotely come close to each other, which is a shame when you think about the logistics of... Even if you take away
so
the rest of the Defenders,
man.
If you say you've got Spider-Man and Daredevil both operate in New York, you know, there is every chance that at some point they're going to rub shoulders. I mean, one of the Daredevil books I was reading yesterday, there was a minor Avengers crossover with... it was actually, do you remember in Daredevil, the guy, the ex-policeman that gets those tablets where he sort of hulks up and he becomes... overly strong, and that his code name is Nuke or Nuke. He was in the Daredevil book I was reading, and the Avengers show up to capture him. Daredevil's fighting him, then all of a sudden Cap, Iron Man and Thor show up. So, wow. You know, these things do happen, but I imagine that, think how long it took Marvel and Sony to come to an agreement. Imagine how difficult it would be for them to come to the agreement with Netflix as well.
Otherwise, I mean, the other thing I can't necessarily see is how this Spider-Man transitions from that into, because I mean, everything I've heard about the I don't know if it's true about the Venom movie is it's going to be R-rated, it's going to be really scary. I mean, that sounds cool, but I have no idea how you see Tom Holland Spider-Man in there.
At the minute, they haven't actually mentioned how he features. They're calling it their Spider-Verse, but they haven't had any kind of mention
Spider-Man
so far.
I'm intrigued as to whether he's actually in it, to be honest. It doesn't sound like he's even that involved.
I don't think he is, because, as you mentioned before, Spider-Man is the vein this at a younger audience, and even as he grows up, you know, when he's 18, 19, there's a huge, huge gap to fill between him being college, university age, and all the troubles that he's going to have there. You know, he's been Spider-Man for 3 or 4 years, and then transferring that character into an R-rated Venom film. But you can't have Venom without the essence of Spider-Man, because Venom doesn't exist in this way without Spider-Man. He gets his powers from his hatred of Spider-Man. So if he's not in it, he's at least got to be name-checked and mentioned. Or it could be like the little Batman cameo from Suicide Squad, where he's literally on screen for 30 seconds just to paint the picture of, you know, we were bonded with Spider-Man once and, you know, and now we hate him and blah, blah, whatever. But it's going to be very difficult. Very, very difficult for them to do.
Yeah, I had this weird, like, little sort of dream in my head that maybe what would happen is Infinity War, the Iron Spider suit gets damaged. He rocks up at some machine, very similar to the Secret War storyline, where he originally even gets the symbiote in the first place. And then that somehow transitions into the Sony films. But
is a brilliant way of doing it. Because
I mean,
getting Spider-Man into space?
That's
fucking brilliant. You need to email someone about that. Although be careful when you're emailing Sony, because apparently they get hacked every now and then, and, you know, Andrew Garfield might have called you a dick or something. But that would be a brilliant way of them doing it.
Yeah. Because, I mean, it's very similar to the way he gets the symbiote in the first place. And I'd initially thought, well, I mean, Thanos is not exactly going to come. Well, I don't think he would come to Earth, but then again, you never know. He has to come and get speak to Vision, at least very candidly, about a certain thing in his head. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good note for us to finish on then, chaps.
Cool.
So, all in all, a film, unsurprisingly, that is unanimously loved. It's making incredible strides at the box office. I think the last time I looked, it was
702.
There you go, you smart ass.
So, no, I checked beforehand. 702 million. It should pass Amazing Spider-Man 2 shortly, which is quite incredible considering, you know, we weren't big fans of that. But it's just interesting to see how amazingly well the very first Spider-Man film way back in 2002 holds up. I don't think it'll catch that. That one made 821, but it made 821 in 2002. So
I mean,
give that some
with
pause.
Inflation. That's got to be sort of.
That's comfortably the biggest. It's not even close.
I mean, that's got to be pushing over 1.5 billion, surely.
Yeah. Yeah. But make no mistake, Spider-Man Homecoming, especially compared to some of the other MCU films, has done really well. I think it would be seventh. Yeah, it would be
something
seventh.
Like that. Once you start getting to the 600 and 700 millions, you're doing incredibly well. And if it levels out at 750, 800 million, it's done incredibly well, considering it's the third stab at a Spider-Man franchise, and it's, you know, people haven't gone completely cold on it yet.
Yeah.
So. Agreed. Thanks for coming on, Marco. Is there anything that you're working on at the minute, writing or recording wise?
Nothing. I am on sort of a hiatus of this, just some personal stuff I've got to sort out. I did obviously want to do this, hence why I'm here, and obviously speaking to you guys about this very special film and this character, which I've loved since I was Rory's kid's age. We'll see what happens after that if I come back at some point.
You'll be back. You always do. You're like a boomerang. Or whatever a South African equivalent of a boomerang is. I don't know.
I can't.
What about you, Rory? Have you got anything at the minute? Either planned or
just,
out there?
Just us at the minute. So I'm happy with that. I think football is... Yeah, let's
oh,
leave.
Don't.
Ignore.
Just no. We're a non-football that, area.
We are a non-footballing area.
Screw football, screw Liverpool, because Liverpool suck. So our last episode still out, which was the Ant-Man review with Ali. Before that, Joey and I did our All About Batman, which was really, really good fun, and we're hoping to do another one of those soon. I was on the latest episode of On the Box, where we did Game of Thrones episode 5. So that one's already out now. So by the time this comes out, it'll have been out a few days. Next up for us, I don't know. Next up for us might, depending on when we record, might be a review of The Defenders. which is out this Friday. So we're probably going to do a review of that in a couple of weeks, because, you know, most people will have watched it within the space of a week. So if you
No chance, man. Not everyone. Not you. Not everyone's you.
Most people will.
Marco won't have watched it for at least a year.
Marco still hasn't even watched Daredevil.
No, I watched Daredevil. You're talking about you were speaking Game of Thrones. Marco,
season 3 of Game of Thrones. Yeah, it's we almost kicked him off, but it's good job we didn't. It was good pod.
He's got a yellow card, so he knows that he's been warned.
It's a strong yellow.
Yeah. So as always, thanks for listening. Thanks for all the engagement that we get online. If you've got any suggestions for things that you want us to chat shit about, or books you want us to review, or suggestions for characters you'd like us to profile, or anything like that, please do let us know. And other than that, we'll catch you next time.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.